We're on Mem Gimel Amud Beis, 8 lines up from the bottom, the second last word on the line where it says, Lema Kitnai. Yesterday we learned the teaching of Shmuel. Shmuel had asserted that if a borrower provided a lender with a collateral, even if the collateral was worth far less than the loan, the understanding is that that collateral is considered a potential payment of the loan. As such, if the lender loses the collateral, then he loses the right to collect the debt whatsoever. Gemara today begins by proposing that Shmuel's halacha is the subject of a dispute of Tanoim. As the Gemara says, Lemeke Tanoim. It would seem that Shmuel's position is actually the subject of a dispute of Tanoim, as is found in the following brisa. It says, Hamalva is chaveiro al hamashkon ve'ovan hamashkon. So same basic scenario describes where a loan was done on collateral and the lender lost the collateral. Says the first opinion in the brisa, Yishava ve'yital es ma'asof. Halacha is that we have the lender swear that he indeed lost the collateral and then he can collect his money. He still gets paid back for the loan. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. These are the words of Rabbi Eliezer. However, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Akiva says that's not the halacha. Rather, Yochel hu sheyomer lo klumil v'yisani ala ela mashkon. The borrower has the right to say the following to the lender. Did we not do this loan on collateral? We did. Therefore, if Avad Amashkun Avdu Masecha, since he lost the collateral, our understanding here was that, okay, you lost your money, now you can't collect your loan anymore. The collateral that you lost was your payment. So says Rabbi Akiva. The Braisa then says, Aval Amalva Elef Zuz Bishtar, if however, this loan was recorded in a document, V'aniach Amashkun Biyado, in addition to the document, the borrower provided collateral. In such a case, divrei hakol avad amashkon avdu ma'asav. Everybody would agree, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree, that in this case, the lender loses the collateral, he loses his money, he can't collect. And the Gemara will explain the reason for this distinction. But first, let's analyze the basic case of the brisa. Echidami. What exactly is the case here in terms of the value of this collateral relative to the amount of the loan? Idishavi shir zuzi. If the value of the collateral is equal to the amount of the loan, continuing now to Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, my time in Rabbi Eliezer. If that's the case, how would we understand Rabbi Eliezer's position that even though this lender lost the collateral, which was worth the same amount as the loan, he could still collect the loan? That doesn't appear to make sense. The Gemara feels at this point that surely the lender should be responsible not to lose the collateral. Therefore, surely everyone would agree, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that in such a case he would not be able to collect anymore. So says the Gemara, Elalav b'delo shavishir zuzi, must be, the Rice is dealing with a case where the collateral is not worth as much as the loan. It's only a fraction of the loan, and yet, in this case, Rabbi Akiva says that if the collateral is lost, then the lender loses the right to collect this loan whatsoever, which would be like Shmuel's opinion, whereas Rabbi Eliezer says that no, the lender still collects at least the balance of the loan. And so if this is the correct reading of the Brayas, it means Rabbi Shmuel Kamiflagi, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva, are arguing about whether they agree with the teaching of Shmuel. Then again, Rabbi Akiva says, like Shmuel, therefore, even though the collateral is worth much less than the loan, still, the understanding is that that collateral is considered a payment to the loan. If he loses that, he can't collect. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer apparently rejects Shmuel's teaching, and he says, not true. And the way Rashi explains Rabbi Eliezer's opinion at this stage of the Gemara is that we say, since collateral was worth less than the loan, the presumption is that the lender only accepted this collateral as a lezichron dvarim, as a record of the loan, a way to, you know, sort of prove that the loan happened. As such, if the lender loses that collateral, then in Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, we say that, okay, he's a shomer, he's technically a watchman, but he's an unpaid watchman, he's a shomer chinam. And so as long as he claims that it wasn't lost due to his own negligence, the lender simply swears that he wasn't negligent and he's not, you know, keeping the collateral for himself. And then he'll be able to collect the entire loan. Although at the end of the brisa makes a distinction that if this loan was recorded in a document, well, then even Rabbi Eliezer would agree. How does that make sense according to the current understanding? It's because if they recorded the loan in a document, well, then it would be redundant for the lender to take this collateral lezichron dvarim as a record. They already have a record in the document. So in this case, Rabbi Eliezer would agree that the lender must have accepted this collateral as a potential payment. And so in that situation, the Raisa says, everybody, even Rabbi Eliezer, would agree that if he lost the collateral, the lender would lose his ability to collect at all. That's the way the Gemara suggests to understand this dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. But the Gemara now says, lo, where it says it's not necessarily the correct interpretation. Rather, we could say, b'delo shavi kuli alma les lehu d'shmuel. And really, if this collateral was not equal in value to the amount of the loan, then all opinions agree that we don't say like Shmuel. We certainly do not say that the collateral is considered a payment of the loan. It's not worth the amount of the loan. And so the Gemara now says that, for sure, if the collateral was worth less than the loan and the lender lost it, he wouldn't forfeit his entire loan. Rather, v'hacha b'deshavi shir zuzi. Here in the Brice of the case is that the value of the collateral is equal to the loan, ubi the Rebbe Yitzchak kemiflagi. And the root of this argument between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva is the question of whether they accept the teaching of Rabbi Yitzchak, which is a teaching about how collaterals work in general. The Gemara presents Rabbi Yitzchak's teaching now. The Yomer Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said, "Minayin lebal chov shekona mashkon." From where do we know that it works? Is when a lender seizes a collateral for the debt, he acquires that collateral. He's considered, in a sense, to be the owner now of that collateral. And as we'll see, it means to his detriment. He's considered to be the owner of it in the sense that if it gets lost, no matter why it got lost, he will be liable. Says Rabbi Yitzchak, how do we know that that's true, that that's the way it works? Shenemar, it says in the Pasuk, which discusses a case where a lender took collateral for this debt, but the case is where the borrower still needs this thing on a daily basis. Let's say he needs it at a certain time, or he needs it specifically at night. So the Torah makes it a mitzvah incumbent on the lender to return the mashkin every day as the borrower needs it. And the Torah concludes with, Ulecha tihiyeh tzedakah. Doing so will be considered a righteous act for you. So says Rabbi Yitzchak, Im eina kona mashkin tzedakah minayin lo. If the lender does not at all acquire this collateral that he takes from the borrower, how can the act of returning the collateral to the one who really owns it, this borrower, be described as an act of tzidkus? There's no special righteousness over here if it doesn't belong to the lender in any way. He's really giving someone else a property that belongs to that other person. And so Rabbi Yitzchak says, Mikan lebal chov shekona mashkon. Here we derive that in fact, when the lender takes that collateral, he does acquire it in a true halachic sense. He's considered to a significant degree to be the owner of that collateral. And so when he takes property that in a sense belongs to him and gives it back to this other person each day, it's considered l'chatiyat tzedakah, for he is actually giving something that's his. And the practical import of this idea that the collateral belongs to that lender is in terms of his responsibility vis-a-vis the collateral. That is, if he loses that collateral, he does not receive the typical leniencies of a shomer that, if it wasn't his fault, then depending on the exact arrangement, he won't be liable. That's irrelevant here because, it was your collateral for this period as long as the borrower didn't pay back. So if you lose it, you lost your own thing. And of course, he will be indebted to the borrower for whatever that mashkin was worth. And so the Gemara proposes that Rabbi Akiva accepts this teaching. Hence, Rabbi Akiva says to the lender, you lost the mashkon. Okay, you lost your money. The mashkon was worth the amount of the loan. You're absolutely responsible for that because you made a kinyan in that mashkon. And therefore, you owe the amount of the mashkon, which is equal to the loan. And therefore, you don't collect your debt anymore. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer does not accept this teaching. And he therefore says that this lender was merely a shomer chinam. He was considered an unpaid watchman vis-a-vis this mashkon, this collateral that throughout still belongs to the borrower. And therefore, if it gets lost, as long as it wasn't through his own negligence, he swears that he wasn't negligent, that he doesn't still have it, and then he can collect his debt in full. However, the Gemara points out that this reading would appear to create a problem for Rabbi Yitzchak, for Lema de Rabbi Yitzchak Tanoihi. Shall we say that? In other words, according to what you're suggesting, this means that Rabbi Yitzchak's teaching is the subject of a machlokas Tanoim. And of course, Rabbi Yitzchak and Amora, who came later, would not find it desirable that his teaching is the subject of a dispute of Tanoim. But the Gemara now dismisses the current proposal. The Gemara now says, V'tizbara, do you think that we could understand this debate of Tanoim, Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva as revolving around Rabbi Yitzchak's teaching about a collateral? Gemara points out that Yitzchak's teaching is actually irrelevant here. For Amar, the Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Shemashkano Shalom B'Shah Salva. Whether Rabbi Yitzchak espoused this concept that the lender acquires the collateral in the sense of being fully responsible for it, he taught this specifically where the lender seized this collateral after the loan. Like the loan became due, and now it was time to pay up, and the borrower wasn't paying. So he started the process of forcibly collecting, and he started out by, having an agent of the court, go and take some asset from the borrower as a collateral. So the borrower pays back. In that situation, which is the case the Torah is referring to there in the pasuk that we quoted above, Yitzchak teaches that the Torah says, you got to give that back every day. And not only that, the lender is considered like an owner of the collateral. Again, it means that he's absolutely responsible for that property. Mashkeno mishas halva miyamar. But did Rabbi Yitzchak say this is the way it works? But the collateral was taken at the time of the loan? He never said that. The Gemara says it's not true. The time of the loan, Rabbi Yitzchak's teaching, does not apply. We definitely do not say that the lender is considered to have acquired that collateral. And therefore the Gemara revises its understanding of this dispute and says, Ella, rather, mashkeno shelo mishas halva. In a case where the lender seized the collateral after the loan, as part of the collection process, kuli amalo pligi de islahu de Rabbi Yitzchak. In that situation, there would be no dispute between these tanoim, for we can say they all agree with Rabbi Yitzchak, and therefore everybody would agree that the lender is absolutely responsible should he lose that collateral. And rather, v'hacha, here in the Braisa, the case is, v'mashkeno mishas halvaso. The Bryce is referring to when the collateral was taken at the time of the loan, which is clear from the language of the Bryce, which said, Hamalva es chavero al hamashkar. It's clearly talking about the lender took this collateral at the time of the loan. The Gemara explains, what is the point of contention in this situation regarding, what's the halacha if later the lender loses the collateral? Does he then lose his right to collect? The Gemara now explains, "Ubishomer aveda kamiflagi." Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer arguing about the question of what specific shomer status this lender has vis-a-vis the collateral, which depends on a question of how you would view a person's shomer status in an equivalent case of aveda, where somebody found a lost object. So, of course, the Torah says, assuming that there's no, right to assume that the owner gave up hope, the finder is obligated to, try to locate the owner and return the lost object to him. And in the meantime, while he's trying to locate the owner, he is a shomer over that object. He's a custodian, he's a watchman. There is a question in terms of what type of watchman. We know there's different types of watchmen, different laws for each type. What kind of watchman is the finder of a lost object considered? Which is comparable to our case of a lender who's responsible to watch this collateral is accepted, in the sense that in both cases, the shomer is occupied in a mitzvah. And by aveda, of course, the mitzvah to return a lost object, and over here, the mitzvah of lending money. So in the case of a person who found a lost object, we have the following discussion. There was a discussion between Amoraim regarding Shomer Aveda, a person who found an Aveda, so he has to watch this lost object till it's returned to its owner. What kind of Shomer is he? Rabba Omar Kishomer Chinam. Rabba said, the finder is considered an unpaid watchman. No one's paying him. Therefore, he is considered the most lenient kind of shomer, somebody is doing a favor, watching it for free, where the halachas are, the most lenient in terms of his level of responsibility. That is, if it gets lost, as long as it wasn't through his own negligence, that he will not be liable to pay. Turning to Amid Beis, however, Virav Yosef Amar Kishomer Socher Dami. Yosef, on the other hand, says that this finder, the lost object, is considered a paid watchman. What's his pay? The fact that he's performing a mitzvah. So one way to understand it is that, of course, somebody does a mitzvah, he earns a great reward, even if it's not, immediately tangible. Or the understanding could be that there is a practical impact now, and that when a person is involved in one mitzvah, he's exempt from a different mitzvah. So if, a poor person comes knocking on the door, he wouldn't be obligated anymore to go and help the poor person because he's already involved in this mitzvah. But the point is that if Yosef says that the finder of this lost object is considered a paid watchman, and that makes a real practical difference because now he has a higher level of responsibility vis-a-vis this object. So the Gemara proposes that we have a parallel dispute over here by lender who took a collateral between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. It is that Rabbi Eliezer says This lender is considered merely a shomer chinam. He's an unpaid watchman. Therefore, if later the collateral gets lost, as long as he wasn't negligent, the halacha is he just has to swear that he was negligent, he doesn't have it anymore, and then he can collect from the borrower. Whereas Rabbi Akiva holds, this lender, since he's doing a mitzvah here, is considered a paid watchman. Therefore, if the collateral got lost, well, this lender is liable for that. So since the collateral is worth the same as the loan, he will now be unable to collect for his loan. According to this proposal, Rabbi Akiva's opinion matches up with Rav Yosef's opinion, and Rabbi Eliezer's opinion matches up with Rabba's opinion. But the Gemara now tells us that it's possible to explain that really Rav Yosef's opinion, that by the lost object case, that the finder is considered a paid watchman, it could be that that view is compatible with all opinions here, even with Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. As the Gemara now says, the lema of Yosef Tanoihi, like according to what you're saying, it means that Rav Yosef's ruling is actually the subject of a dispute of Tanoim, something that Rav Yosef would certainly prefer not to say. But seemingly, you know, that's true because Rav Eliezer is saying that the lender is, you know, not liable here. For he's considered only an unpaid watchman, even though he's involved in a mitzvah of lending money. And therefore, that seems at odds with Rav Yosef's opinion that no, if you're involved in a mitzvah, then you're considered a paid watchman. The Gemara now says, lo, Rav Yosef and Rav Eliezer are not necessarily incompatible. We could explain as follows, that Bishomer Aveda de Kuli Al Misl Hu Rav Yosef. In the case of somebody who found a lost object, we could say that all opinions, even Rav Eliezer, would agree with Rav Yosef that since he's involved in a mitzvah, he's considered a paid watchman, he's a higher level of responsibility. Ve'hocha, we could say, here in the Braisa, what's the specific case? It's talking about Bimalva Tzarech L'mashkon Kemiflagi. We're talking over here about a case where the lender has decided to use the collateral for himself. He did so with the permission from the borrower. And not only that, they agreed that whatever amount of financial benefits the lender derives from the collateral, that amount should be deducted from the amount that the borrower will owe. And so, you know, that avoids any problem of ribis. He's not, you know, charging interest here by, you know, getting an extra benefit beyond the principal. So the Gemara suggests that in this case, we have the following dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. That Mar Savar, one opinion, Rabbi Akiva holds, that in spite of, you know, this additional part of the arrangement, mitzvah ka'avid, the overall transaction here is still considered a mitzvah on the part of the lender. He has done a mitzvah by extending a loan. Okay, he's chosen to benefit for himself too, but it's still a mitzvah. For he has, you know, deducted whatever amount he gets is deducted from the loan, so he's not receiving a net gain here. Therefore, it's still considered a mitzvah, and therefore he's still considered a paid watchman. Whereas, Umar Savar, Eliezer on the other hand holds, La mitzvah ka'avid. This is no longer considered a mitzvah. It's no longer a straightforward case of a loan. Rather, it's more like a rental. The lender is basically, you know, putting down this money and, you know, deducting from that money as he uses the object. It's more like a rental, a business transaction. You know, the lender needs something. Okay, fine. He is getting what he needs through a rental since it's not a mitzvah in this specific case. Therefore, we surely would not consider him a paid watchman over the collateral. Rather, he's an unpaid watchman. But again, the point is, in a regular case of a mitzvah, like let's say Shomer Aveda, we could say that Rabbi Eliezer would agree with Rabbi Yosef that he's considered a paid watchman. However, the Gemara is concluding that according to this interpretation, Rabbi Akiva, who says that even in this case, by the collateral, he's still considered a paid watchman, is clearly incompatible with Rabba, who says by the lost object case that he's considered an unpaid watchman. The Gemara now points out that Lema Kitanai, it does appear that the teaching of Shmuel, again, that he said that even when the collateral is worth a fraction of the loan, the presumption is that the lender is accepting the collateral as a potential payment. If he loses that, then he loses the ability to collect. Seems that that ruling is the subject of a dispute of Tanayim. For we have a brisa that says the following: Hamalva es chavero al hamashkon. If two people did a loan on collateral, v'nichnasa shemita. And then we went through the Shemitah year, the seventh year. And of course, the Shemitah year entails a halacha that says that all debts are canceled. Says the Braisa, here where it was a loan on collateral, the halacha is, afal pi she'eino shava ela palga, even if this collateral is worth only half, let's say, of the loan, eino mishamit, collateral still has the effect of preventing the Shemitah year from canceling the debt. And this is because of the fact that the way the Torah describes the halacha of the Shemitah, you know, canceling the debt, is that, you know, upon the Shemitah year, lo yigos es chavero, now the lender shall not press his fellow, his borrower, for the money. In a case where the loan was on collateral, though, you don't really have to press him in the same way because the collateral, you know, backs up the loan, says that you don't have to really press him because if he doesn't pay, then the lender can simply, you know, keep that collateral. So because of this, the first opinion here says, even if the collateral was not worth the same amount as the loan, still, Shmita Yir will not cancel the loan. These are the words of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. However, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Omer, the Nasi argues, and he says, Im haya meshkono kineged chovo eina meshamet. If the collateral was equal to the loan, same value, then indeed the Shmita Yir will not cancel the loan, for the reason we explained, the Vim Lav. But if that collateral is worth less than the loan of the Meshamet, then the Shmita Yir will cancel the loan. So the Gemara first analyzes the Brayas and asks, "My Eino Meshamet the Kamer Tanakama." What exactly did Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the first opinion, mean when he said that even where the collateral is not worth the amount of the loan, still, Shmita does not cancel the loan, ilema kinegdo. If all Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was saying was that Shmita doesn't cancel up to the value of that collateral, so let's say the loan was 100, the collateral was 50. If you say that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel meant that the borrower will still owe 50, but not the other 50, the Gemara says that would be problematic for Mechlal, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Savar. If you read Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel that way, well, then let's follow through to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. It would mean that, in his opinion, kinegdo nami meshamet, he says that the loan is completely canceled, even corresponding to the value of that collateral. The Gemara says, ostensibly, that wouldn't make any sense, because that would be saying that this collateral is not for a potential payment whatsoever, and therefore the entire 100 of the loan is like loyigos. He has to press him for that whole 100. The collateral does nothing towards paying for the 100. But how could he say that? Allah my toughest mashkon. Why then would the lender bother holding on to this collateral at all if it's not to help potentially pay for the loan? So because of this, the Gemara says ella lav kineged kulo. So it must be that when Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said that when you have this collateral that's worth 50 on the loan that's 100, that Shmita does not cancel that loan, he meant that the entire loan is intact, it's not canceled by Shmita whatsoever. Now, how does that make sense? The collateral was only 50, it's only for half of the loan. The answer is, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel would be saying, like Shmuel, that even where the collateral was worth less than the loan, nevertheless, the collateral as a backup is considered potential payment for the entire loan, so it's not lo yigos, it's not considered pressing him for any part of the loan. To this, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi responds, you're not true. Rather, Shmita is meshamet, that is, the Shmita year will be meshamet half of the loan, and the collateral will only make, you know, that half of the loan impervious to Shmita. So it means, if this interpretation is correct, it would be the Shmuel kemiflagi. It means that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi are really arguing about the teaching of Shmuel. However, the Gemara responds that lo. Really, you could say their dispute has nothing to do with Shmuel's teaching. But the Gemara now suggests that leolam kenegdo, that in fact the point of contention here is about that portion of the loan that is equal to the value of this collateral. Ubehakim iflagi, and this is the dispute here. Tanakama savar kenegdo. First opinion of Shimon Gamliel argues that, okay, whatever the collateral is worth, that amount of the loan will be impervious to Shmita, but not more than that. So in other words, you don't have to assume like Shmuel. Would only make, you know, that part of the loan that's actually a payment for impervious to Shmita. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Savar Kinegdo Nami Meshamet, that in fact the Shmita year completely cancels the loan, even the amount of the loan that the collateral, you know, is worth. The Ka'amart, as far as what you said above, we initially rejected such an understanding, for you said, as it makes sense, how could Rabbi Hanasi say that the Mashkun is not here to serve as a potential payment for any part of the loan? If that's so, lemai tafes le mashkon, what's the point of the mashkon at all then? The Gemara now answers, I'll tell you what the point is, lezichron dvarim ba'alma. According to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the purpose of the collateral here is strictly as a record. It just serves as a reminder of the loan, but it's not here as a potential payment whatsoever. Therefore, the law of Shmita kicks in for the entire loan. Because again, the collateral is not here to pay for the loan. So to collect any part of the loan is, you know, pressing the borrower to pay in violation of the Shemitah law. Shemitah says, no, the loan is not owed anymore. That's the understanding of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's opinion. According to this, none of the Tanaim are presuming like the opinion, the ruling of Shmuel. This then concludes the sixth parak of Shavuos Hadron Alach Shavuos HaDayanin. We now begin the seventh parak of Shavuos. The Mishnah begins, Kol HaNishbayin Shavitara Nishbayin V'lo Mishalmin. When it comes to any of the biblical oaths, the rule is that the Torah has the defendant swear and uphold his claim and, you know, thereby not pay. It's always the form of the oath when you're talking about a biblical oath. Over the Mishnah introduces us that Ve'elo Nishbayin V'notlin, in the following cases, the Rabbanan decreed that the plaintiff in each of these cases swears and then collects. And here are the cases. We have a case of Hasachir, a worker who's claiming his wages, Ve'anigzal, somebody who was the victim of theft, Ve'anechval, somebody who was apparently injured by somebody else, Ve'shekinegdo Chashad al Hashvua. In addition, let's say the defendant became obligated to swear, but there was a practical problem because he is suspect of, you know, he can't be trusted to take an oath. So in this case, the Rabbanan decreed that the plaintiff instead takes the oath and collects. And finally, we have a Chenvani Alpin Koso. We have a case of a storekeeper who extends the credit for somebody's workers. We'll see the case. This is another situation where the Rabbanan decreed that the plaintiffs swear and then collect. And the Mishnah elaborates on each of these cases. Hasachir Ketzad. What's the case involving this worker where the plaintiff swears and collects? So the Mishnah describes, here's what happened. Amr lo, tein li yischari shishli biyadcha. A worker comes over to his employer. He says, please pay me my wages that we agreed to for the work I've done. Hu omer nasati. The employer claims, I already paid you. Ve'alo omer lo natalti. The worker insists, I did not collect my pay. The Rabbanan decreed that hu nishba v'notel. The worker swears to what he is saying, that he did not receive his pay, and then he collects. The Gemara will explain the rationale of this. The Mishnah, though, presents a different opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that this is not the halacha. Rather, the rabbinic oath would not kick in this kind of situation, unless and until there was a partial admission from the employer. Ketzad. For example, what would be the case? So let's say, for example, the worker went over to the employer and he claimed, please pay the amount we agreed on of 50 dinarim. The employer claims, you already received the dinar zav, meaning 25 dinarim. You already received half of the pay. So here we have a partial admission, and of course, this activates the biblical oath of modav mikta satayna, which says that if a defendant admits to a part of a financial claim brought against him, then he has to swear regarding the part he denies. Rabbi Yehuda says the Rabbanan came along in this situation and shifted the oath obligation from the employer to the worker. Because, as the Gemara will explain, there's a tendency for the employer to not remember correctly because he's so busy with his different workers. And so the Rabbanan said that we shift the oath opportunity to the worker, and he can swear to his claim and then collect the money. The Mishnah continues, Nigzal Ketzad. So what's this case of somebody who was apparently a victim of theft? The Mishnah says, here's what happened. Ho yume'idin oso shenichnas lebeso lemashkeno shelo birishus. There are witnesses that person A illegally entered person B's home to take something of person B. For example, even if person A was person B's creditor, but if he went ahead, you know, without going through the proper procedure, and he just, you know, on his own unilaterally barged in this person's house to go and take collateral security for this loan he was attempting to collect, so this is illegal. Witnesses saw him go in like that, but that's all we know. The Gemara will add another point here. But we don't know clearly that he necessarily took anything. And hu omer kele no talta. Person B, the debtor here, claims you took, you know, these things from me. Hu omer lo natalti. Person A, who is now, you know, defendant, claims, I didn't take anything from you. Says the Mishnah, the Rabbanan decree that hu nishba v'notel, that the plaintiff here has a right to swear that indeed he took these things from me, and then he collects for that amount from the defendant. But again, Rabbi Yehuda argues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, no, there would be no rabbinic decree achet deheshah miksa soda, unless the defendant admitted to part of the plaintiff's claim. Ketzad. How? Amr lo shnekel metalta, for example, the plaintiff says, you went and stole two utensils from me, and the defendant disputes this. He says, no, I only took one kli from you. So here he admitted to part. Therefore, the Torah law is that, you know, he normally would have to swear about the portion he is denying, the Rabbanan, came in and said here that the plaintiff instead swears and collects. And the Mishnah continues, Nechval Ketzad. What's the case of this person who was injured? The Mishnah says, here's what happened. How you may eat the Mososh and Nichnas Tachas Yoda Shalem, V'yatza Chavu. We have testimony that a person entered somebody's home, perfectly fine, intact, and he exited the home with an injury. And the Gemara will explain that it's a case where the evidence leans toward that indeed it was an injury inflicted by this person in the home. But we don't have, of course, any absolute proof, no clear testimony about this. And so we have Yamar lo chaval to be, the person with the injury does claim that this other person injured him. V'yamar lo chavalti. But the defendant says, no, I didn't injure you, I didn't damage you. The Rabbanan decreed that Hareza Nishma v'notel, that the alleged victim swears and collects for damages. But once again, Rabbi Yehuda Omer says, no, there would be no rabbinic oath, no opportunity to collect, unless there was a partial admission from the defendant, Ketzad. So for example, what? Amr lo chavalta bi shtayim. The plaintiff claimed, you gave me two injuries, ve'alo amr lo chavalta b'chalachas. Defendant says, no, I only gave you one injury, so he's admitting to part. And then again, the biblical oath would normally apply to this defendant for admitting to part. The Rabbanan said that we instead allow the plaintiff to swear and then collect the entire amount that he's claiming. The idea is that, you know, since the evidence, you know, leans more toward the plaintiff, therefore the Rabbanan said that, you know, he could swear and collect for the whole thing. Mishnah continues, Shekenegdo Chashad Ala Shvua Ketzad. What's this case where the defendant is suspect, and so we can't trust him to swear, and therefore the Rabbanan stepped in and said that, okay, instead the plaintiff swears and collects, continuing to Mem Heyam and Aleph. Mishnah explains that we would consider somebody suspect, you know, not qualified to swear, if he had previously taken a false oath, that is, Achaz Shvua Saidas, whether on this previous occasion he had taken a false oath of testimony, like he swore falsely, they didn't know testimony, or whether it was a false oath that he swore falsely, that he didn't owe somebody money, he didn't have his deposit, some monetary claim. And the Mishnah says, v'yafilu shvua shav, even if on this previous occasion he had simply made an oath in vain. And the point is, it didn't involve another party, there wasn't, you know, money on the line, it wasn't, you know, adversely affecting another person. But still, taking any kind of false oath would cause him to lose his credibility. And there are other things that could disqualify him. The Mishnah continues with more examples. Let's say this person was a chronic gambler, or malve beribis, a person who gives out loans illegally on interest, he charges other Jews interest, to mafrichi yonim, or a person who flies pigeons, which is either another form of gambling. Sachik b'kuvya means, you know, with dice, so this one's gambling with the pigeons, the pigeon races. Or it could mean that, you know, he steals other people's pigeons, or v'socher shvias, or somebody who sells produce during Shemitah in violation of the laws of Shemitah. All of these people would become disqualified from taking an oath. And therefore, if he was involved in a situation where normally a biblical oath would apply to him, let's say he admitted to part of some claim against him, the Rabbanan said, Shekinegdo nishba v'notel. Okay, in this case, the plaintiff will swear and collect. The Mishnah then says, what if Hayu Shnein Chashudin? What if the plaintiff as well was Chashudin, was disqualified from taking an oath? Well, in that situation, Chazra Shvua L'mekoma. Then the oath will go back to its place. The Gemara will present two possible readings of those words. What does that mean? It goes back to its place. Divrei Rabbi Yossi. These are the words of Rabbi Yossi. But Rabbi Meir Omer Yachlok. Rabbi Meir says, in this situation, where neither can take the oath, the halacha is, they split the money that is the subject of their dispute. On tomorrow's daf, we'll elaborate on this case of the Chenvani al Pinkasa.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.